This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Athletic Baseball Show. To celebrate this year's Baseball Writers Hall of Fame announcement, Ken Rosenthal put together an incredible guest list for a three-hour preview and reaction show. Go back and check out episodes 1 and 2 for the first 8 interviews of this series, including legendary baseball writer Claire Smith, Jimmy Rollins, Dustin Pedroia, Braden Halliday, the son of Hall of Famer Roy Halliday, and then Ken Griffey Jr., Eduardo Perez, Jim Palmer, and Jim Cott. This episode is the reaction episode to David Ortiz being elected to the Hall. Features Fangraphs, Jay Jaffe, along with the Athletic senior writers Jason Stark, Dan Connolly, and Britt Garoli. Without further ado, here's Ken.
Congratulations to David Ortiz, who, by the way, is my colleague at Fox Sports. We have a lot of fun on the pregame show together, but I don't know that that's why he's getting into the Hall of Fame. You see why right there. The 931 OPS, the 541 home runs, the career BWAR of 55.3. Now, it's not as high as it would be with others, but the reason for that, of course, is because he was a designated hitter. So no one else gets in, just Big Poppy, but he is this year's BBWAA representative in the Baseball Hall of Fame. David Ortiz got 77.9% of the vote. He came, well, a good amount above where 75% is. He cleared it by a little bit more than I thought he would. So Ortiz in with 77.9%. Bonds and Clemens, their final years on the ballot, they do not get in. Bonds is at 66% in his final year. Roger Clemens at 65.2%. Of course, 75% needed for induction. Scott Rowland, 63.2%. That's a jump for him of more than 10%. Scott Rowland is going to make it into the Hall of Fame at some point. Not this year, but he is going to get there. And then Curt Schilling, he fell from 71.1% last year to 58.6% this year. It's his last year on the ballot. He will now have to go to the Veterans Committees, which is what he wanted. And of course, for Schilling, I don't know what this means in his future, but certainly had he kept his mouth shut, do I think he would have been in? He would have had a really good chance. Once you get to 70%, you're generally in. We will talk now to Jay Jaffe from Fangraphs, and Jay is the leading Hall of Fame expert among the BBWAA. Some might say that's a dubious distinction because of the BBWAA, but I think highly of Jay, extremely highly, and Jay can analyze for us better than anyone just what this vote means, what the trends were. And Jay, first off, let's talk about Ortiz. Are you surprised?
Not really, no. If you go back to a couple of years ago, yes, I think I'm surprised that he got in. I said as recently as last year that I thought he would get in eventually, but that it wouldn't necessarily be a first ballot election. The trend obviously was positive in his favor. Jason Sardell, who has done the best projections for who gets elected for each of the last few years, has had him at about a 98 to 99% probability based on not only the returns in the tracker, but also the patterns of how voters handle large hall versus small hall, like, you know, including 10 players on their ballots, and whether they vote PED candidates. He was able to make a finer distinction than just, oh, these guys are trending this way. They'll drop by this much relative to past returns.
So, Jay, Bonds and Clemens clearly didn't make it. I don't know that we're surprised by this, but you, perhaps more than most people, have a sense of how they might fare in Veterans Committee votes in the future. And granted, your JAWS metric and all of that is mostly related to the BBWAA vote, but we all know the Veterans Committee can be even tougher on players associated with PEDs than the BBWAA. So what is the future for them, for Clemens, for Sosa? How do you see this going forward?
Well, I think they probably have an uphill battle because, let's face it, the Hall of Fame itself controls who gets on those committees. And even if they're not explicitly questioning, will you vote for this guy? If we put you on that committee, they probably have a general feel for, you know, what who has spoken out in favor and against these candidates and taken their temperature in other ways, less formally. So I think that's a problem. At the same time, I think, you know, I think there is, if, you know, hearing players, you know, Bonds and Clemens contemporaries talk, they all know just how rife the game was with performance enhancing drugs. They all know what the temptations were. You know, I think there are some, you know, who are more forgiving than others. I mean, we've heard Hall of Famers like Bob Gibson and Mike Schmidt, you know, say that, hey, they weren't sure whether they could have withstood the temptation had it been available in their day. And we know also that, you know, we've already got PED users in the Hall of Fame, probably steroid users. We know that there are admitted Andro users from back when Andro was legal. Amphetamines are a performance enhancing drug. They didn't do the same things that that steroids do, but they kept guys in the lineup. They helped fight those hangovers and those day games after night games. They padded the stats in different ways. I mean, you know, if you're talking about guys who have thrown together a bunch of 100 RBI seasons, well, you know, you don't have to think too hard about what it took to stay in the lineup long enough to get all those extra RBIs. So I think it's naive to pretend that Bonds and Clemens are such exceptions that they deserve to be outside where we've already seen, you know, numerous other PED users of some form elected.
We're talking with Jay Jaffe of Fangraphs, the great Hall of Fame expert. Jay, we talk about, yes, Bonds and Clemens and Schilling and Sosa, but I'm curious, and I know this is a little bit unfair since the announcement was just minutes ago, but gainers, the guys who look now to be on a real path toward the Hall of Fame. I see Rowland at 63.2%. I see Helton at 52%. What does that mean for their future candidacies?
Well, everybody who's gotten above 50% at one point from the writers has gotten in, with the exception of the three guys that fell off. The Gil Hodges caveat, fortunately, I'm able to retire that after his election via the Golden Days Era Committee. You know, I think this bodes well. I mean, both Rowland debuted with 10.2% on the 2018 ballot. He's really benefited from the stat head push. He's 10th in jaws among third basemen. He's rocketing here. He's in position to be elected next year. Todd Helton, 52%. He had a slow starting candidacy, and he's been able to overcome that. Again, he's right now, thanks to the election of Hodges, who dragged the average down just a hair, Helton is right at the average jaws for Hall of Fame first baseman. That despite not so strong back half to his career due to his age-related and injury-related decline. But he is trending towards election, and I think, you know, the election of Larry Walker on the 2020 ballot helped pave the way. The Coors jinx has been broken, so to speak. I think people understand that we can put those stats in perspective. So I think those guys are on their way. It looks like Billy Wagner as well with 51%. Excuse me. He's only got three more tries on the ballot, so it's going to be, you know, I think a bit of a nail biter along the lines of Walker and Edgar Martinez and Tim Raines, but he's trending in that direction. So this is a big deal for all three of them today.
You know, it's interesting, Jay, I just noticed this as we look at the results right there. Joe Nathan, a pitcher who has been compared quite a bit of late to Billy Wagner, similar profile statistically, and yet he is off the ballot, did not get to 5%, as you see right there. Now, I hate when this happens because I want guys to get a fuller consideration. Kenny Lofton is perhaps the best example from our era of a player who deserved that fuller consideration and perhaps will be honored by a veterans committee. But I'm curious your reaction to Nathan falling off the ballot.
Yeah, I had Nathan on my ballot, and I included him because, by the way that I'm evaluating relievers using kind of an experimental form of JAWS that incorporates win probability, I have Nathan as the eighth best reliever of all time, Wagner number six, Papelbon number 10. I didn't have room for all three on my ballot, but I did want to call attention to how strong a career Nathan had and how worthy of further discussion he was. So I had to bump somebody off of my ballot. In this case, it was Sammy Sosa, because it was clear he wasn't getting elected. At the time, I guess there were only, I think I might've been the first or the second person in the tracker to include Nathan. And I caught all kinds of hell from people on,
on
Twitter. Yeah, you know, whatever. You know, I did it to make a point. And the point is, I think, you know, I don't know if Nathan's a full-fledged Hall of Famer, but I do think he's worth talking about for at least another year. And you know, especially when there's less pressure, you know, to get those 10 spots. And it's a shame to me that he fell so close. He fell so short. Just what a few votes here. What do we get? What was the final total of votes? So he needed either 394. So he needed 20 votes to get in. He got 17, or 20 votes to stay eligible. He got 17. That's a heartbreaker. Yes. You know, and it's, I think the best, you know, the glass half full way to look at it is 10 years from now, when we see the way that the careers of Craig Kimbrell and Aroldis Chapman and Kenley Jansen wrap up, because those are the three guys from the current who are currently active who have even a puncher's chance at getting into the Hall from among the relievers. We'll have better perspective on just how strong the candidacies of Wagner and Nathan and Papelbon are. And again, I think it's a shame that we can't talk about Nathan for another year at least.
Jay, two more players I want to ask you about before we let you go. Gary Sheffield, exact same percentage as last year, 40.6. That's one. And the other, Jimmy Rollins, first time on ballot, 9.4%. That's a reasonable showing because the ballot is so crowded right now. Your thoughts on both of those players?
Yeah. Sheffield, you know, I saw a handful. I had a count. It'll be in my my candidate by candidate breakdown, which will run tomorrow. There were a number of voters who bumped him off their ballots this year so that they could include Ortiz and or Alex Rodriguez, knowing that with Bonds, Clemens, et cetera, leaving the ballot, they would have that space back next year. Some of them said so explicitly in their ballot explainers. For others, it's implied just looking at the tracker. You can see where guys were dropped. So I think, you know, this is a wheel spinning year for Sheffield. Unfortunately for him, he's running out of time. He's got two more chances. It wouldn't be unprecedented for him to get to 75% if there were no PED or any other baggage attached to him. We've seen it happen. However, when you've got the PED factor there, it's more of a problem. And I think, you know, ultimately though, the good news for him is that he's still not far off from 50%. I think he can get to 50% over the next 2 years. And if he does that, he's a serious candidate on the ERA committee. He's an ERA committee guy who gets to keep coming back until it's clear he's not getting that support or he gets in one way or the other. As for Rollins, 9.4%, I didn't have him on my ballot. He would be the, one of the lowest shortstops according to Jaws, but I understand the appeal of his candidacy completely. I mean, you know, the combination of the power and the speed, you know, and solid defense and the leadership, the less quantifiable stuff. He was the leader of those Phillies and, you know, as part of their five division titles. I mean, I'm, you know, more positive about Chase Utley's Hall of Fame case coming up in a few years than I am Rollins, but I think that there's a place in the discussion for Rollins, just like there's a place in the discussion for Hunter, Torrey Hunter, nine-time Gold Glove leader who just squeaked by this year, I see, with 5.3% and got something like, I think, closer to 9% last year. You know, it's fine to keep these guys around and to keep talking about them. I mean, if they get into the Hall of Fame, hey, great. I don't think I'm in a rush to endorse them based on my system, but I got no ill will towards him, and Rollins was a fun player.
People forget, Jay, we're talking about great players. Right. We're not denigrating players. That's not the point of this exercise ever. It's simply to separate the best of the best, and it's an extremely exacting exercise, especially the way you approach it, and so diligently and so thoughtfully and so analytically. And ultimately, if you decide, hey, Jimmy Rollins, not for me as a Hall of Famer, doesn't mean Jimmy Rollins wasn't a great player. All-time hit leader in Philadelphia Phillies history, 131 years. It's amazing. So we will see how he fares in the years to come. And remember, now Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, and Sosa are all off the ballot. So the ballot will clear next year and we'll have an entirely different discussion. Jay, I want to thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure, man. Thanks so much.
Hey, sure thing. And I'm sorry that I couldn't figure out how to tie this bad boy.
Yeah, I had a little trouble.
I don't know how you do it. Somebody said it's like tying shoelaces. And there. Now I understand the problem because I am not very good at tying my shoelaces. I still haven't taught my five-year-old daughter how to do it. So,
Jay, the whole problem with the thing is it's counterintuitive. When you're tying it, it makes no sense, and then it comes out, and it's fine. I don't even know how I do it. It took me years to get it down. Jay, thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Take care.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
All right. Now, from The Athletic, my friend and my colleague, my esteemed colleague, I should say, because he, of course, is a winner of the BBWAA Career Excellence Award. And it is our honor to have here the mayor of Starkville, the man, Jason Stark. And Jason, you've had some time to digest the ballot now, the results, what happened. Beyond Ortiz, what stands out to you?
Well, hey, there's a lot that stands out, Ken. And, you know, I never thought that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens were going to be able to make it. If you really look beyond those big percentages that you saw in the Hall of Fame tracker, the trends I thought seemed clear. They just weren't gaining any traction with returning voters. 5 years ago, Ken, I thought for sure that those two guys were getting in because they had crossed the 50% threshold and there were 5 years left on the ballot. And everybody over the last 40 years who had been in that position had gotten elected. We'd seen about 30 voters change their minds from no to yes on both of them that year. You would have thought that there would be more to come. It turned out not to be the case. In the last 5 years, based on the results that we've seen on the Hall of Fame tracker, do you know how many voters changed their minds on Bonds and Clemens and went from no's to yes? 11. So they needed 100 votes, 100 new votes 5 years ago, and they got 11 from returning voters. And there just weren't enough new voters coming into the process for them to have 75%.
Jason, David Ortiz, he was about 83.2% in the final tracker and came in at 77%, which is really excellent. And he is a Hall of Famer. He cleared the 75%. I remember at the start of this, about a month ago, not even at the start of this, we were a little bit into it. And I had something written and I asked you to read it. And I said, Ortiz might get in. Ken, he is tracking to get in. Are you surprised that he got in it as a first ballot Hall of Famer?
I thought it was going to be actually even closer than it was. He did make it with, 3% to spare. So here's what surprised me is, again, I have a column that's about to get posted on The Athletic right now that looks at what we learned from this Hall of Fame election. Here's one of the most stunning things that we saw in the David Ortiz vote. I know Jay Jaffe just mentioned the incredible work of Jason Sardell, who crunches these ballot projections like no one else. And he did the research for me, and it turned out that David Ortiz was getting almost two-thirds of the vote from voters who didn't vote for Bonds, Clemens, or Manny Ramirez last year. So this is the most hardened anti-PED block of voters that we had, and almost two-thirds of them voted for Big Papi. That's the part I found surprising, and that's why he got elected.
That is telling. And clearly, you could say that there was less evidence against him from a PED perspective than there was against some of those other players that you mentioned. And yet at the same time, the disparity there, that's probably what is surprising to both of us, right? That people look at him here and look at all these other guys there. And I'm not saying that it should be different than that. It's just perspectives. People will say the WAA guys love him. He's a popular guy. He's Big Papi. Well, we've elected plenty of players who did not talk to us, who are unpopular, including one who threatened to sue me, Eddie Murray. So it is not a popularity contest. I would dispute that. But at the same time, there was a lot to recommend David Ortiz about what he accomplished as a player. And I think that's something you pointed out really well in your column, just who he was.
Well, David Ortiz was a team-changing, franchise-changing, curse-changing player. You know, his numbers, if you're just going to look at David Ortiz, the hitter, like, there's no question that that guy was a Hall of Famer. The only two reasons not to vote for him were, A, because you weren't going to vote for any DH. And, you know, I used to hear this stuff about closers, too. I would never vote for a closer. And then the first unanimous Hall of Famer was a closer, Mariano. So that was one reason. The other is, obviously, if you thought he was, quote, a PED guy. And one of the things that I think we saw clearly looking at this vote is that the words of Rob Manfred, this is now goes back 5-6 years, telling us specifically, don't use that 2003 survey testing as the basis for a vote that says this guy was a PED user. I think, obviously, voters looked at that and used it as a guidepost for how to vote, because I just told you, 60-something percent of voters who don't vote for any PED guys still voted for David Ortiz. That's amazing. That tells you that Rob Manfred's, he essentially exonerated David Ortiz. That's how voters looked at it. I wasn't sure that that's how this would turn out.
I know people are going to say, well, Manfred, we don't like Manfred. He exonerated him. Who cares? Well, you can say that. But it wasn't just Rob Manfred who said that. Years ago, before he passed, the late union leader, Michael Weiner, one of the most respected people in our industry ever. Jason and I both knew him well. He was someone that was revered within the game. He made the same case for Ortiz. He was the head of the union at the time. After that list was released by the New York Times, I believe it was in 2009. And again, if you want to say, oh, Manfred, you can't take what he says seriously, well, okay, fine. But Michael Weiner, that's another person from the other side of the aisle who said the same exact thing. So is it conclusive? No. All it is saying, or all they're saying, is that that test, the 2003 test, the results of that test cannot be taken as gospel. And keep in mind, after that, and again, this is not conclusive. I'm not drawing any absolutes here. But after that, David Ortiz played 13 years without once testing positive. Other players on that ballot did not.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I wrote a column a week or so ago looking specifically at the PED questions that we faced as voters and tried to outline what I thought were the differences between David Ortiz and Bonds, Clemens, Sosa, these other names on the ballot. And afterwards, I got a note from an attorney, and he said, here's the way I look at this. Could I prove to a jury that this player used PEDs? And like, his read on David Ortiz based on the quote unquote evidence was, no, I couldn't. And that told me something that like, we're the jury in this case, the writers, the voters. And we decided that there was reasonable doubt that David Ortiz used PEDs. Don't you think that's the best way to put it?
That's a very good way to put it. Now, let's move on, Jason, to some guys who gained quite significantly in this year's results. And the first one I think of is a guy you covered quite closely for many years, Scott Rowland. 63% now. He is on a track to the Hall of Fame. Could even happen next year, I would think, with the ballot clearing.
Yeah, he's positioned to be next up, right? Because everybody above him in this balloting either got elected or is off the ballot. Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, all off. Ortiz elected. Scott Rowland is next. And everybody in the history of the modern voting system who has gotten to 60% or higher in his fifth year got elected. And quite a few of them got elected the next year. The most recent example of this is Mike Messina. And in my column on what we learned from this Hall of Fame election, I posted the year-to-year votes of of Messina and Rowland. It's incredible how closely they parallel each other. He's within just less than a percentage point of what Messina got in year five, and he got elected the next year. If you look at the ballot in 2023, it seems to me the only candidate who even has a chance is Carlos Beltran, who is now stained by the Houston sign-stealing allegations. And so I think it's our instinct as voters to want to see somebody get elected. If there's going to be somebody get elected next year, that somebody's going to be Scott Rowland.
And Jason, Curt Schilling, another player you covered closely, as did I, he falls off the ballot. He kind of tumbled off the ballot, actually. 71% last year. He was definitely in position to get elected this year, and then he said he didn't want to be part of the process anymore. We don't have to go through the whole saga with the viewers here. Just your emotions on Schilling not getting elected, because I know you were supportive of his, as was I, and I know, as you do, that a lot of the things he said over the years were unspeakable and kind of unforgivable in many ways. And yet, for those of us who separated that from the player, I would say we're disappointed for the player.
Yeah. You know, Curt made history in a really unfortunate way tonight. Nobody had ever been this close to election going into their finals year on the ballot and not gotten elected. But when the guy basically tells the voters, don't vote for me, it's hard to be surprised when they don't vote for him. They did what you told them to do. And yet, you know, I heard Eduardo Perez on with you earlier, Ken, and Eduardo and I have talked about this quite a bit. You know, Curt Schilling is a really complicated case because we knew him when. He won every off-the-field award for character and humanitarian work that you could win. You know, I saw when he was in Philadelphia the way he helped ALS patients. He didn't just raise money or give them money to make it look good. I mean, he got to know all of these, so many of these people whose lives he touched, and they touched his, and that was real. And so, look, it's been really difficult to watch some of the stuff he's tweeted, the way people have reacted to him, the way he's reacted to us. I mean, all of this has just taken on a life of its own that, for those of us who knew that Curt Schilling back then, it's been really difficult to watch it unfold. And yet, nothing that happened tonight is surprising. What I'm really going to be interested in now is what happens when the Today's Game Era Committee considers him, maybe as soon as 11 months from now.
Yes,
I think, you know, of all these people that fell off the ballot tonight, he's got the best chance to get in because I think they'll use the same logic that I used. He's not running for mayor. He's in the running for the Baseball Hall of Fame. And as a pitcher, Curt Schilling was way above that Hall of Fame line. So that's the guy that I think we voted for.
Jason, last question, and I want to ask you this broadly, but what the heck. anything else jump out to you on the ballot? Helton was one for me. Joe Nathan was one for me. I'm curious what your takeaway was.
Yeah, I think, as Jay Jaffe said, Todd Helton he's going to get in now. I'm not sure exactly when, but Larry Walker has paved the way for another Rockies hitter to get in because he's helped us understand what to make of Coors Field, what it does for players, how it hurts players. And Todd Helton, if you just look at his numbers, and we have tools now to compare them to players who would have played in a more neutral environment, that's a Hall of Fame resume. And so I think Todd Helton is clearly on a path now. Kenry, who was the second player you asked me about?
Joe Nathan, falling off the ballot.
Yeah. It seems like there's somebody like this every year. Joe Nathan, when I first went through the ballot, I thought, I'm going to vote for this guy. I vote for Billy Wagner. And Joe Nathan's very close to Billy Wagner. You take the 10 years that Joe Nathan was a closer in Minnesota and Mariano Rivera was a closer in the same time period. He runs second to Mariano and a really close second in just about every significant category and actually beat Mariano in a couple. And so I went right down to the end about whether to vote for Joe Nathan. In the end, I thought there weren't enough great seasons by closer standards for me to vote for him. He didn't become a closer until age 29, and the clock ran out. Had he done it for another couple of years, it would have been easier for me to find space on a crowded ballot for him. But it really saddens me that he drops off. We've had a number of really terrible one and dones. Johan Santana, David Cone, Kenny Lofton, Jim Edmonds. There's so many. Carlos Delgado is one I thought was really tough. And Joe Nathan becomes another one. He was obviously one of the best closers of his era. Just the bar for a Hall of Fame closer is so high. I think that's what hurt him.
Jason, appreciate your time greatly. And I would say this publicly, I've said it to you privately. I don't know that there's anyone who helps us understand the candidacies of these players better than you. And we all look forward to seeing your column on The Athletic. I'm sure it will be up shortly. If it's not up already, I'm not reading it right now. But Jason, look forward to it. Thanks so much for the time.
Can't appreciate it. Always good to be on with you.
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Do you ever wish you could have something both ways? A zero-calorie cheeseburger, red wine with no headache, new baseball uniforms that aren't see-through? Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but you can have both with Mack Weldon's timeless apparel with performance fabrics. I just got Mack Weldon's silver crew neck tee in a couple of different colors in the Silver Peak Polo. They're awesome. They look fantastic, but more importantly, they're the most comfortable shirts I've ever worn, and that's important. They're nice enough that I wear them to work, but so comfortable that they're a go-to on the weekends too. It's not flashy, just classic, always in style clothing made with performance materials, but those materials don't give their clothing that techie, shiny look that you see a lot of the time. They also have shorts, sweats, and warmer weather fleeces and button-up shirts, all the things you need any season of the year. Don't take my word for it, though. Try it yourself. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com and the promo code MLBSHOW.
All right, from Jason Stark of The Athletic, we go to two other writers from The Athletic, one of whom is a voter, one who will soon be a voter, I believe. And that would be Dan Connolly, who covers the Baltimore Orioles for us. Hey, Dan, and Britt Garoli, who is one of our national writers. Britt, good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, both of you, I want to ask you just your initial reactions, and then we'll dig into this a little bit more. Dan, let's start with you. Your initial reactions to Ortiz getting in and perhaps some of the other results as well.
Initial reaction is I'm very surprised that – I guess I'm not surprised, but Ortiz gets in and Bonds and Clemens do not. And I think Jason said it perfectly, but I mean, you know, it was a judge and the jury here, and apparently there just was not enough evidence to put Ortiz into that PED category. And I think if you look at his numbers, we all think he's a Hall of Famer, but was there more? I don't think a DH thing is much of a decision anymore. I think Edgar Martinez is in, so we know that, you know, DH is a position. To me, the interesting thing was Ortiz versus those two guys, and I think the electorate just decided that there was not enough evidence to put him in that same category.
That is a really interesting way of looking at it. Brett, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Dan, and I think maybe we've listened to Buck Showalter and his thoughts on Ortiz for years has maybe clouded our judgment, but I just tweeted this out, guys, and I think it's fascinating to think about, what if the personality of David Ortiz was on Barry Bonds? Would Barry Bonds be a Hall of Famer? I think the answer is yes.
I do too.
And that's not right. We shouldn't be basing it off of how these guys act to the media, what their personality is, like their charitable efforts. We need to kind of draw the line in the sand. And if you're not going to let PED guys in, well, David Ortiz still has some ties to PEDs. So how can you let him in and not let Clemens and Barry Bonds in? I think it's really unfortunate. And you see a couple guys on Twitter. I just saw Kevin Gossman tweet, like, how do you explain this? And I think a lot of people are left wondering, how do you explain this? I don't think there's an easy explanation other than David Ortiz was very well liked and Barry Bonds was not.
It is difficult to explain, Britt. There's no question about it. To play devil's advocate, I would say there was a lot more evidence on Bonds and Clemens than there was on David Ortiz. Now, was it conclusive evidence that you would find a person guilty of in a court of law? I don't know that it was that. Actually, it was not that. We know that because these guys were not found guilty of anything when brought to the legal system. But at the same time, there was certainly a lot out there. So it is a fair question. There's no doubt about that. And it is one that will linger. And it is one that has a lot of fans upset, I know. Now, there's a whole nother percentage of fans, quite a large percentage, that doesn't ever want to see these two guys in. So, Dan, I want to ask you about something you wrote before this announcement, of course. It was about maybe a month ago. It was one of the best columns I read on the Hall of Fame voting process. And you explained why your vote for a player might change from year to year. And there was a very good explanation for it. And actually, we've seen it play out today with Joe Nathan not getting 5%. Strategically, perhaps one of us, two of us, three of us, four of us should have voted for Joe Nathan to keep him on the ballot. Didn't happen. If you can, Dan, that column you wrote, how would you summarize it?
I guess I would summarize it. It was actually evidence today with Torrey Hunter. And that to me is you change your decisions, your votes, kind of based on who you think is a Hall of Famer. You get 10 guys. That's all you have. And you have to kind of decide, you know, which ones go in, which ones don't. We are the jury in this case. And if there is a guy that I think should be considered and I think has a real, you know, chance to get in, or at least has the credentials to get in, and I think he's falling off, I really have to think about that because I don't want another Kenny Lawson situation. And to me, Torrey Hunter was that guy, and Curt Schilling made it easy. In fact, maybe Torrey Hunter sends Curt Schilling a Christmas card on behalf of me because I would have voted for Curt Schilling. He told me not to. That leaves an open spot, and so I decided to vote again for Torrey Hunter as I did last year. Torrey Hunter made it by 2 votes, actually by 1.3 votes. One of those was mine. So I think you really have to think about how you're doing these, especially if we're going to have 10, you got to look at that. And I changed my mind on things 2 years ago. I put Sheffield in as I hadn't before because I knew Ortiz was coming and I couldn't say Ortiz deserved to be in and Sheffield didn't. So I maneuvered it that way. I think you have to look at it every year and look what you think are the 10 guys that should go in.
What you're talking about is a strategic ballot. And you have to look at it that way because of the rule of 10. And I mentioned this earlier. Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch has proposed what he calls a binary ballot. Yes or no. That would be probably the fairest way to do it. The Hall doesn't want it done that way because this way PED guys have a harder time getting in. Now, Britt, you do not have a vote yet. But I wonder, as you get closer now, how you think you will approach it. Will you be a big Hall person a small hall person, because I will tell you, Britt, that when I was not a voter, I thought, nah, three or four guys a year, maybe that. It's just for the best of the best. And then when you get the ballot in your hands and you're weighing this guy versus that guy, it becomes a lot more difficult. What do you think?
Yeah, I could see that. I was going to answer with small hall person because I think it should be hard to get in, right? This should be the best of the best. There should be one guy every year. There shouldn't be this huge class of 10, right? That's not what the Hall of Fame is about. But I could very easily see, Ken, how I would fall into that trap of, oh, but I really like this guy. I don't want this guy off the ballot. Like you guys said, there's that strategy of, you know, do you have a relationship with the player? Did you cover the player? These are all things that, as much as I think we want to remain objective, they creep into your psyche, right? I think if Kurt Schilling was just player X, if there were no names on these ballots and all you got was stats, we would have very different looking ballots. So I don't know when I'm actually eligible because my 10 years in MLB, Dan asked me this the other day, like, don't all count? So I don't really have a countdown going.
Just let me interrupt for one second. Britt was at MLB.com for a period of time. Those years do not count toward her eligibility in the BWAA. The reason for that was the BBWA deemed that MLB.com employees were essentially working for the leagues and the teams and therefore would not be impartial enough. We could debate that, but that's what she's talking about. Go ahead, Britt. Sorry.
Correct. No. And so I think when you look at this and you look at this ballot, it's, I don't know how many hours you guys spend on this, but this seems like a second job. This is a stressful endeavor where you can't just check boxes and mail it in. It's public. Guys are, you know, guys and girls are held accountable, which I think is the right way to do this. But I think you're right, Ken. I think I'm going to get that ballot and be like checking a lot more boxes than I initially had kind of set out to check.
Dan, what do you think happens now in the future with Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez? We haven't talked a lot about them, and clearly the Bonds-Clemens message is rather resounding. And Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez, as opposed to the two guys we mentioned, there is evidence against them, and they didn't fare particularly well in the balloting today. I don't expect them to fare too well in the future. How do you see it?
They're out. I think this was a moratorium from, you know, when you look at the Bonds and Clemens, what happened, they don't have the same arguments because first of all, you know, they weren't, didn't have as lengthy of careers before, you know, PEDs were illegalized, if you will. Secondly, I think the suspensions killed them. I think as soon as you got the suspensions from Ramirez after it was, you know, these rules came down and then A-Rod being out an entire year because of it, that's it. And for me, I don't vote for him and I won't, either one of them. And I think Claire said it earlier, you know, one time, for, you know, the fool on me kind of thing. I mean, it's the first time, okay. Second time, uh-uh. And I think that's the way most voters are going to look at that.
Britt, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was also a generational thing. When you're talking about Sosa's and the Bonds, you know, we hadn't really yet absorbed steroids. We hadn't really said this is bad. We shouldn't be doing this. They were kind of in the throes of that first group of great players doing it. By the time we get to Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez, everyone knows steroids are wrong. Everyone knows you're going to get in trouble. Punishments are now handed out. So it's almost like, okay, you missed the boat on that. You can't claim innocence. Alex Rodriguez was caught in so many lies. I point to Nelson Cruz as kind of the exemplary guy who got caught up in steroids. He admitted it. He never tested positive again. But I think just owning up to your mistakes is a key factor here. And you look at Alex Rodriguez, who's tried to revamp his image with the broadcasting career. And I just don't think he's ever going to get past it because of all the lies he told and all the implications that his cheating had.
Alex Rodriguez, 34%. Manny Ramirez, 29%. And Manny's been on the ballot a few years now. Alex Rodriguez, that was his first time on the ballot. And I would agree with both of you. It's going to be really difficult for both of them. And I know there are a segment of voters that believe none of this matters. They should be Hall of Famers. It's tougher for me with those guys. I did not include them on my ballot. Were they two of the greatest players I ever saw? Of course they were. But because they knew the rules, and once the rules were in place and penalties were in place, they continued or still broke them. That is problematic for me. That is almost like flipping off the entire sport. And that's how I see it. So we will see how they fare in future years. Dan, give me a couple of people, players that you'd like to see get in the next few years.
Well, I think we talked about Scott Rowland. He's definitely a guy. I'm a big Andrew Jones supporter. I'm a supporter of guys who played really good defense. And I think that's something that we've lost here. We focus so much on offensive numbers. We don't really think about the defense. And, you know, a guy like Torrey Hunter is not going to get in, but he had 9 gold gloves. You know, and you look at Todd Helton was a really good defensive player. For me, the most shocking thing, I guess, is how much Omar Vizquel dropped off. He dropped off my ballot this year. I had been a big supporter because of his defense, but you know, I just couldn't continue that given what we know now. And I think that's something that hopefully if these guys, you know, continue the way they are, we're going to see Rowland in. We're going to see maybe Jones in, and we're probably going to see Helton in.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Helton kind of has taught us that he's a Hall of Famer who happened to play at Coors Field, right? And I think voters are so much more informed now that we can take into consideration things like where you spent your career. We can look at the adjusted park factors. These numbers just simply weren't available in the past. I think he's a guy who's trending. Billy Wagner, another guy who I think could continue to kind of tick up here. As Dan mentioned, I think the defense is becoming a little bit more important to a lot of voters. But I think the more analytical we get, the more stats we get, just the more informed people are in approaching these ballots. Guys who we didn't immediately think had these eye-popping numbers, you look at their careers, you're like, this guy deserves to be in. So I think we're going to start to see these guys kind of trend up. And I do think Schilling dropping off made way for a lot of these guys to make some headway in that percentage to get closer to that 75%.
All right, Britt Garoli and Dan Connolly from The Athletic, two of my great colleagues. It's great having you guys on. Thank you so much. And I want to thank all of our guests today. We can go through them, starting with Claire Smith, Jimmy Rollins, Dustin Pedroia, Braden Halliday, Eduardo Perez, Jim Palmer, Jim Cott, Ken Griffey Jr., Jay Jaffe, Jason Stark. You guys have made this into a tremendous day of baseball conversation. And that is something that, to me, has been lost a little bit in what has gone on the last few months and years. We're not talking enough about baseball when we talk about the Hall of Fame. So I want to thank everyone for doing that. I want to thank everyone for watching as well. This was a lot of fun for everybody at The Athletic. This is Ken Rosenthal. Thank you for joining the Hall of Fame special.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.